Millions of Americans tuned in to hear President Bush deliver his first formal State of the Union address last night. State of the Union speeches are one of a president's best opportunities to command the spotlight with little competition and to lay out the political agenda for the year. NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson heard the speech in the studios of member station WFYI in Indianapolis with a diverse group of ordinary Americans.
President Bush has the highest public approval ratings of any modern president, and he's kept them higher longer than other presidents. So it wasn't surprising that the 10 Hoosiers who offered us their opinions about the president's speech were impressed with his performance. But they reacted very differently to some of the most important things he had to say. Take Mr. Bush's answer to the question, where does the war go from here?
Some of these regimes have been pretty quiet since September the 11th. But we know their true nature. North Korea is a regime arming with missiles and weapons of mass destruction while starving its citizens. Iran aggressively pursues these weapons and exports terror, while an unelected few repress the Iranian people's hope for freedom. Iraq continues to flaunt its hostility toward America and to support terror.
Our group of voters was assembled by Brian Howie, the author of a nonpartisan political newsletter in Indiana. Tony Shaw, an X-ray technician, found Mr. Bush's rhetoric on the war threatening. Jack Howie, a retired newspaper man and the father of Brian Howie, did not.
But I don't think the United States has a serious military threat in any way, shape, or form from anybody. I'm sorry.
Tony called the tone belligerent, and I think it's one of assurance that he's telling the nation that we are going to keep after the terrorists until we get them.
There was a consensus in the group, expressed by sculptor Patrick Mack, that Mr. Bush would go to war with Iraq, maybe not soon, but next.
I found the beginning of the speech seemed to be kind of a grim picture of the reality of where we're heading as a country right now. He realizes, like the rest of us, how grave this could be. This is just the beginning. I think he's setting the groundwork to get the funding for the necessary things we're going to have to do to take to prevent future attacks.
As all State of the Union addresses are, this was a political speech. Mr. Bush paid lavish attention to one of the Republican Party's most coveted groups of voters, women. He talked about women shedding the veil and going to school for the first time in Afghanistan, and he spoke about progress in education reform at home. Diane Hancock, a Democrat, noticed.
I was really happy that he brought one of the women who had been working for women's rights in Afghanistan into this. And I think that was one of the biggest triumphs of the war.
President Bush made a conscious effort to transfer his tremendous popularity on the war to his domestic agenda, well aware that his father's perceived inattention to economic problems after he won the Persian Gulf War helped cost him re-election. Last night, George W. Bush announced big new spending increases on defense and domestic programs, and he said the resulting budget deficits would be small and temporary if Congress didn't overspend.
My budget includes the largest increase in defense spending in two decades. Because while the price of freedom and security is high, it is never too high. Whatever it costs to defend our country, we will pay.
Democrats hope that voters' concerns about the return of the budget deficits will give them support when they criticize the president for fiscal mismanagement. And while polls show voters are not ready to blame Bush's tax cuts for the return of the deficits, the women in our group were worried about the red ink. First, Diane Hancock.
It's really very easy to say in a slogan, you're going to do something, and it sounds good to everybody. I mean, all
right.
You have to do is say the word education, and we all get excited.
Right.
But what does he really mean by that, and how is he going to fund it?
Donita Smith and Katrina Nestel agreed.
I feel like he's got a federal gold card for America right now that he just told us he's going to cash in on. And, you know, where is that money going to come from? And, you know, he said that it was going to be short-lived and that we would pay it off, but he didn't give any, you know, real idea of how we would do that.
It was a wonderful speech. It was very charismatic. He really struck the emotional iron while the fire was hot, and that sounds great. It was very appealing, but again, where is that money going to come from?
President Bush didn't mention campaign finance reform in his speech, even though the Enron scandal has pushed that issue back onto the congressional agenda, giving supporters in the House the signatures they needed to overrule House Republican leaders and force a vote on a bill outlawing soft money. None of our group of voters missed the fact that campaign finance reform wasn't mentioned, but Cameron Carter, a marketing executive, and Jack Howie differed on whether there will be any political price to pay if Congress ignores the issue.
No one cares about finance reform. The Beltway elites care about it. No real person cares about it.
real people care about it, but I think most of us have come to the conclusion that it ain't going to happen, because the only way it's going to happen is if Congress changes some rules, and they're not going to.
President Bush has promised to expand AmeriCorps and Senior Corps, the volunteer program started by Bill Clinton, and turn them into something called USA Freedom Corps. Struck a nerve with Diane Hancock, the Democrat, but didn't impress Andrew Horning, a libertarian Republican.
One of the things that I found the most surprising, and probably the best vision that he laid out tonight, was when he spoke of 4,000 hours of service to your nation and the Freedom Corps and doubling the Peace Corps. I think that that was a really interesting vision, because to influence the world, you really do have to do a whole lot of things.
I was just kind of hoping he could say something about, you know, put in your service, but to do that, go join a church, join the Moose Lodge, you know, meet your neighbor. Not everything needs a government program. In fact, you know, I think we've seen just how effective citizens can be when you let them. If you give them enough information, these guys got on their cell phones, they found out what they, you know, the position they were in and what they could do about it, and they took action that government could not.
Dave Maher, a 35-year-old tree trimmer from Indianapolis, was quiet for most of the discussion, but when he spoke, it was clear he liked what he heard.
I agree that the state of our union has never been stronger, but why did it take the tragedy of September 11th to really bring us together? It's a big, big question in my head. And overall, I respect President Bush for his courage and enthusiasm and willingness to stop all terrorism nationwide, worldwide. I think he's on a pretty good roll.
Dave Maher shares the feelings of many of the voters who have given President Bush an 85% approval rating. The question now is, how long will it last, and will it extend to issues other than the war or to congressional Republicans who, unlike the president, are on the ballot this fall? Mara Liasson, NPR News, Indianapolis.